Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Welcome to today's episode of New Cyber Frontier. Today, we're going to talk, and this whole day of recording, which you probably get them as different episodes, so you don't see that, but it's been a lot about the physical aspect. Cyber physical security is what this show is going to be about. Today, we have Eslem Taufik, who is a professor at Ohio State, a PhD, and the founder of Robustech, which is the company that does integrated circuit cybersecurity protection. So cyber physical. But welcome today, Eslem. How are you?
Thank you, Chris. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing good. And we met at HOST, which is Hardware Oriented Software Security. HOST, what's the T stand for?
Now it's embarking.
Technology. anyway, but it's a conference on cyber physical security.
Yeah, hardware security. It's like a hardware security oriented conference, like focusing on security aspect related to hardware, integrated circuit chips and design tools and stuff like that. So it's very much focused on physical security. Yeah.
So before you check out today, this is going to be interesting. We'll just lead with that. So that's hardware security and security in the semiconductor on the chip is something that most people, especially in information security or data security, privacy at that user level, often don't even think about or think it's something beyond them or they'll never have to touch it. But it does kind of all come together. And today we're going to talk about how. So don't go away, but Eslem, talk to us about your background. How does somebody get to be in hardware security?
Well, I mean, it has a long trip. I cannot say that it was like intentional or anything, right? I had been always, very interested in computers at my young ages and thinking about these kind of like chips which are driving all of the computation power, etc. So at probably like grade 5, grade 6, I start to read the BC magazine and stuff, talking about microprocessors and memories and stuff. And I start to understand, there is like a whole lot of things behind like the software things that we see, right? And then I have been like very... interested to open the box, look inside and know what's happening to make, all of the programs and things that we see on the screen happens. And from there, the journey starts to learn about the hardware and the interest start to be like raised more and more in hardware. Then I just get into engineering, right? Like engineering school at my local city in Egypt. Then, went to computer engineering, it was like a major where a mix between microelectronics and computer engineering as well. And that had been also one of the reasons that why like the physical aspect of like computer and computation had been something important because I was just lucky, right? Because now I could, due to the kind of topics I studied, I can see like the two layers, like the software and hardware and the kind of interaction between them. And start to understand, contribution of the hidden layer. Because when you deal with computers, mobiles, etc., you always see the application and things on the front end, but you don't see what happens down there, right? So that makes me more and more interested in integrated circuit design. And I had been always like the dreamer. So say, okay, one day I will be working in this industry, which is something like a dream at this time, at this country, at this circumstances. So that's like... we don't own this technology at all. We don't deal with it at all. But I was like just, hoping to happen. And here we go. I mean, it just happened.
All right. We're going to be right back here from our sponsors. We're going to unpack some of that a bit and find out about your background which is started somewhere else. We'll be right back.
Blockframe Technology offers next-generation blockchain-managed trust and security. Unique non-fungible tokens are used to secure software bills of materials to provide data quality and security for every transaction in your supply chain. Deploy advanced peer-to-peer product security, scale zero trust capability to millions of IoT devices, allow vendor tracking and accountability, and rapidly reset from compromise. Unchangeable, time-sequenced blockchain data provides next-generation security using machine learning trust algorithms and audit analytics. Start securing your supply chain today by contacting Blockframe at www.blockframetech.com.
Welcome back to New Cyber Frontier. On today with Eslem Taufik, a professor at Ohio State University and founder of Robus Technology. But you gave us a little bit about your background, how you got interested, you know, looking at the things, the hidden layer. But you're from, where is it that you're from? And tell us your background and how you got to the United States.
Yeah, so I'm from Egypt, and I had been in the academia for a long time over there, right? And then I just got my PhD from France. So I lived in Europe for a while. At that time, I just got with a wonderful professor as my supervisor, who I learned a lot, not only in science, but also in life. I mean, it's very rare to meet like these kind of very wise and very kind people who are like, how to say, genuinely try to teach you everything. That one had been one of those people. So he contributed a lot in my entire career. And there I started to be, you know, learning in depth about microelectronics and chip design. Before that, in Egypt, there had some program over there in some institution, I don't want to put names here, that like tried to push this technology into the country, just because at that time they're thinking probably it's one of the boosters for the country economy, etc. And I had been benefiting from this too much. Behind the scene, there had been one of the companies which is working in the CAD industry, and they did a lot of effort to help students over there. You know, this is somehow a developing country anyway. So they bought a lot of resources to let people, you know, learn about these kind of technologies. Once I got my PhD, I returned to my country again, sit there for a few years with all of the, you know, things happens at the, you know, that period 2010 and above, if you know the history and the kind of events there in the Middle East. Then after a few years, I decided to come to the United States, working at Ohio State University with collaboration with wonderful team here, and pursue more, you know, research and work in the integrated circuit design and hardware security. So, I mean, that's in a nutshell the kind of path I had.
It's interesting that you said you latched on to a professor that kind of gave you a lot of guidance, both professionally and in life, because I watched your students flock around you, and you had a following that is uncommon with respect from your students. And I saw that at the event where we met. And it's one of the things is like, okay, there's something to this guy. He has not just a knowledge that he's portraying, but something in life that people flock to. What do you think about that? What do you do that draws that people like that?
Well, I think I'm always saying that I had been extremely lucky. Okay, so it just, I had been lucky to meet like good people on every milestone in my life. I don't know why, but it had been like that. So always in my undergrad, I had a very good, you know, professors who taught me things. And then in my early career, I met like one or two professors who had been like, you know, trying to help me tremendously without any, you think about it, oh my God, he's helping me like as if I'm his son. And then I got this supervisor, and you think, okay, these people are from the same country, from the same culture and everything. You go to another corner in the world, you learn about, you know, different people, different culture, different country, and you see one person who is like very keen and genuinely trying to help you and trying to push your career forward and let you, you know things and professionally and in life. So you just get the lesson, okay? We're here to help each other, and it's a duty of particularly university professors, right? Is to help other people and develop the next generation. Without this, we're not going to go forward. So it's I'm just trying to pay my debt, and I'm not sure I'm even doing it. So yeah, that's
I think you've done that successfully, and I know I took a couple notes from watching your student engagements, and you know there's some things I can emulate myself. So just let you know that you know that's transparent. People see that, and it's definitely appreciated in the industry, and it's worth people, you know, getting to know you. And if you're looking for the study in this area, Ohio State would be a great place because of people like yourself. So definitely one of those things I just wanted to let you know that shines through.
Thank you.
No, you're welcome. So now looking at hardware security and integrated circuit, it's where do we start? Because whenever I worked in the semiconductor industry for a while, and integrated circuits and creating them is almost like screen printing. It's like doing t-shirts where you're making just layer after layer of these micro things on there that then stack up to look like a city if you look at them through a microscope with all kinds of roads, which are the wires. And that's the transistors and the diodes in there, and they're not just flat, they're stacked up and vertical and yeah. In you know, so it's a three-dimensional kind of process.
Yeah.
What is it that is the weakness there that you're securing against would I guess be the starting point?
Well, I mean I think that the good entry for hardware security comes from the time of probably, if we just recall, like the 70s, 80s, right? So we started with mainframes, as you know, right? And at that time, hardware had been captivated in a controlled environment, like a trusted environment. And people who are interacting with this hardware had been professional people. They know what they're doing. And they had been like trusted people. Mm-hmm. So we started with computation resources with like putting in a captivated environment and protected environment. And the only gateway to get access to this hardware started with the operating system and the software layer. This is why throughout the years, I would say starting from the 60s, when we developed like very strong operating systems and above, we keep like thinking about the security and the access management, et cetera, from the software perspective, right? Because I mean, the only threat that we can see is a person who is connected through the terminal and then through probably a PC, et cetera. So everything had been, like from a hardware perspective, had been protected. The only gate is the software. And we keep building the fences and defenses in the software layer and just forgot about the hardware. So once in the like early 2000 and above, we started to take our hardware and get it into the street. We learned to build, you know, mobile phones. We learned to build laptops. Even with PC, things had been a little bit more safe because it's a personal computer at the end of the day, and the owner of the hardware itself is a person who is like managing it. Probably there had been a weakness because sometimes you can be a PC user, but you're not very, you know, or the person is not very knowledgeable on how to manage the hardware, probably in a proper way. But then taking this hardware to the street make the hardware exposed to probably an interaction which could be malicious. And from this point, we start to notice that there are like side channels who can lead some important information, and these side channels can be exploited by, you know, a hacker or so to extract some valuable information out of the hardware. And I think that was like the starting point. Just think about everything that we had right now. All our information, biometrics and important things are on our mobile phones. We're riding cars which are computer on wheels, and we just park them on the street. So the hardware start to be very well exposed to the outside world. And then from there, the hardware threat start to come to the scene. And it's just because the system start to be extremely complex and the defenses in the hardware is almost not there. So the problem start to be a very complex problem to tackle at this point.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a break here from our sponsors. We'll be right back.
Blockframe Technology offers next-generation blockchain-managed trust and security. Unique non-fungible tokens are used to secure software bills of materials to provide data quality and security for every transaction in your supply chain. Deploy advanced peer-to-peer product security, scale zero trust capability to millions of IoT devices, allow vendor tracking and accountability, and rapidly reset from compromise. Unchangeable, time-sequenced blockchain data provides next-generation security using machine learning trust algorithms and audit analytics. Start securing your supply chain today by contacting Blockframe at www.blockframetech.com.
Welcome back to New Cyber Frontier. I'm today talking to Dr. Islam Taufik. And before the break, he gave a good explanation of why hardware security has not been mainstream. That originally the hardware was in a protected environment. Only companies had it. They only let people with a card get in the door, and they were trusted employees. Yeah. But now it's in the hands of everybody on the street and our little phones and our little devices. And we still have the same level of security as we did back then, walking everywhere. Why is that important to the common person? What does it matter to me as a product owner? Should I care at all?
Well, I mean, it's important because microelectronics, I think, is start to be some sort of the blob of everything that we have around us, right? So if you think about a lot of things in the infrastructure, like the gas networks or the electricity distribution or the kind of devices we set at our homes, cameras and, smart keys and all of the wearable electronics, the kind of information from security and privacy that we have on our mobile phones, cards that we write them. So just extend this to the coming 5 to 10 years. I would say wearable electronics, implantable electronics, our living in the metaverse. Things are going to change very rapidly and very tremendously, right? And all it related in way or another about the involvement of the hardware inside our environment and probably inside our bodies. So more and more we get interaction and more get dependent on distributed hardware, which appears everywhere, then it makes perfect sense for everybody right now. I mean, companies, governments, like normal person on the normal life to be concerned to a certain extent about the, protection that we have for our information, either from a security standpoint of view or from a privacy standpoint. It touches our life.
Okay. So my understanding, and just I've been in this industry as well, and I want you to elaborate on this, that the biggest really weakness is that inside one of these devices, a manufacturer makes one, there's millions of the exact same product out there. And usually a hardware security breach breaches the product, and then everybody that owns one is in jeopardy, not just the one person that has the device. So elaborate on that level of vulnerability.
Yes. So I would say some products that we're using in our life, for example, smart keys or garage opener, right? Or things like this, right? So they are designed in a certain philosophy and certain thinking about security, and sometimes some of the products, right, use a level of security where the root of trust or root of the security is just copied on like every single copy of the product. And that's definitely not the right way to do it. We had been doing it for a long time. It just because it was not known and it was not very famous that people can breach into this. But if you just search the internet on about like breaching on garage openers or breaching for some electric car, again, I don't want to give specific names, but you will find a lot of cases where, I mean, the security design and the framework equipped with these devices had been weak, so that one breach on one device will give the attacker and access to this kind of root of trust or root of the security. And once it get it and it's copied everywhere, then he has access to every single copy of that. So
like having access to everybody's iPhone.
Well, particularly iPhone is a little bit, I would say, good from this perspective to a certain extent. But there are other things which probably is more dangerous than the iPhone, I would say. I'm worried about the garage opener, for example. Somebody will have access to my house, so or smart keys. I mean, these kind of keys were like working with Bluetooth and everything. There are a lot of security concerns about this. I'm not saying that every product there is vulnerable or anything. I'm just saying that there should be standards and things that like we as users have to look for and manufacturers have to follow, so that we're sure that our, you know, assets and our life is well protected, because this kind of hardware vulnerabilities things are very serious and they can be in certain extent harmful, particularly if we extend this to anything related to wearable or implantable electronics. Cars is also something that a little bit concerning, because that can be life threat. So,
So from what I heard is that this is a manufacturing, the company that makes the device is who needs to do this. As a kind of consumer, what should I be checking for to know that the product I'm using, the company that I'm trusting, has done their work and is, you know, at least hitting some best practices?
Well, that's a very hard question. So I think we still very early to this, I would say. So we don't have very solid standards just to check, you know, and that will be the perfect solution. We have a solid standard that is, I would say, enforced by the regulators, etc. And then as a consumer, you just need to check, oh, my product is following this standard or not following this standard. That will be the easiest way. There are a lot of efforts going around from a lot of governments and regulator agencies, again, without naming a specific agency, right? But still, we're very early to this. So I cannot tell an exact, you know, standard to check for, but most of the product will talk a little bit about the kind of encryption they're using and the kind of hardware security that you're using in way or another in their data sheet. Is this easy for the normal user to check for? Probably not. So maybe following or maybe trying to buy your stuff from a reputable, I would say, manufacturer, most like trusted manufacturer, will be one way to go. But I mean, the concise answer to your question, it's very early to get something that for the normal user to check and be confident that the product that you have inside your life or around your circle is really a trusted one.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and you mentioned trust and root of trust. Explain that to people that might not have ever heard that before and what that means in the kind of the beginning of this process of security.
Well, I mean, the simplest way to explain this is, you know, these kind of old keys that we have, right? Like the physical key. Okay. So at the end of the day, I mean, you trust that your house is safe because you have a door and you close this door and this door is extremely strong, etc. But at the end of the day, how you open this door, you just own the right key. So everything around us, including the communication that we're doing with our bank, for example, is just done through encryption. Okay. So we send the information to the bank. So I send my credential, etc., to the bank. But these credentials are going to travel through the internet. Everybody can has access to packets that I send through the internet, starting from somebody is sitting on my Wi-Fi to my, you know, internet service provider to like the, you know, everybody is connected to the internet backbone itself. So there are a lot of places that people can have access to this information. So we don't transfer this information in a plain format, in a plain text format. If you send your username or password, they are not like trouble plain text, but they are encrypted, right? So when they are encrypted, I mean, it's exactly like you put them in a box. And if you assume that this box is extremely strong and nobody will be able to break through or like, you know, break into this box, which is true for most of the, I would say, encryption algorithm that we have. But once you get access to the key, I mean, you can, and you copy it, you can legitimately open the box and lock inside. That's exactly what I mean by the root of trust. Because if you think about, for example, the communication between your phone and your door lock, which is electronic door lock, you're sending some sort of a credential to door lock saying, hey, I'm the owner of this house. And these credentials are sent over the air and they are encrypted. If somebody got the access to the encryption key, will be able to open these packets, look inside, know what credential you have, and then he will be able to, you know, act as if it is like the legitimate owner. So
the root of trust is like that locked box that's you trust everything inside of it. So that's your root of trust, and how you access it is the credentials.
And I would say the root of
go ahead.
Yeah, please. I would say the root of trust is the key itself. Is not the box. Yeah, it's the key itself. Yeah.
So how you store and manage the key is what you're working on to be secure at the hardware level.
Exactly. I mean, one of the things that we're doing to be sure that from a hardware, because as simple as that, if you store this key in a memory field, for example, and that had been a way, very common way to hack a lot of hardwares, again, without mentioning names, some big names, okay, it's just to dump the memories where like the keys are stored, etc., and just read them. I have the keys.
Okay. So dumping memory. So now we're looking at cyber physical is starting to protect the memory from dumping. Give us some other examples of what's done in the cyber physical.
You mean related to this particularly or other things?
Just what types of security that you work with at that level.
Ah, okay. Also, there are like these kind of side channel leakages, which are hardware itself can leak information in certain ways, right? Which is, let's just assume when you're working with hardware, you're consuming some current, right? Because you have like the battery and the battery is powering your hardware and you're consuming some of your battery, am I right? Then somebody can just come and inspect the consumption of the power, right? Either with like looking at the current that you're using or looking at some phenomena, which is electromagnetic interference. Right. So and know what kind of current you're using currently and keep drawing these current traces. And from there, the person will be able to tell what kind of data you're processing right now. So data usually in computers are ones or zeros, and we're consuming different current when we process one versus processing zero. Right. And looking at the current traces and do some sort of a statistical analysis, which is a complex, I would say, way to analyze it, but it's very well known and very solid, and there are a lot of tools can do that. People can tell what kind of ones and zeros you are processing right now. And if you can tell what are the data you're processing, these data can include some root of trust as a key, for example. Then if you can get access to what key is processing right now or is being used right now in the hardware, knowing the key again will get you access to any kind of encrypted data that goes through any kind of wired or wireless channel. So we're working on protecting the hardware so that makes the hardware don't leak this information. So if, for example, if the hardware is processing one or zero, we design the hardware so that it consumes the same amount of power. So nobody will be able to tell, right, if we are processing one or zero at a specific moment. That's one of the things that we're doing.
So ways to extract, you said dump into memory, extract a key. Watch the power to determine when it's being operated on, if it's a one or zero, and you can find the key. Listening to, you said, RF or radio waves coming off of it, you can also see if it one or zero.
Extract the key. Yes.
Everything is trying to get the key.
Yeah.
Trying to get the root of trust that you said. And all the side channels are just different ways of doing that. What are some other unique ones?
Well, I mean, side channel usually include power and electromagnetic interference or like RF signals, like what you just described. Another thing is error insertion. Sometime, I mean, your hardware is working in sequence trying to take your data and encrypt them step by step. And sometimes we just, you know, launch an error, throw a clock or like, you know, playing with a power or with some laser attack on the chip, making the hardware get into an error state, where it just freeze or don't do the processing correctly, and then just dump this content, which are intermediate, so data is not really encrypted. And from there, you still can extract either the data itself or the key that is used. And if, again, as you mentioned at the beginning, if you had been successful with dumping the key with one copy, depending on the fact that in some products, and hopefully not a lot of them, they just use this hardware root of trust or this like root of trust in on every copy, then getting an access for one copy will give you the access for everyone. So,
and a million people's devices have that same key code root of trust they're trying to pull out. And
so the
this whole study in cyber physical is designing ways to make that less transparent or make that root of trust protected.
Exactly. Yes. We're working to try to make actually two aspects. Three, I can name them. One is to be sure that the hardware itself is protecting the root of trust so that it's not easy to extract it, like just getting it from a memory and stored memory and you're done. That's one aspect. The other aspect is trying to protect the hardware itself so that we close all of the side channel that can leak some information about the operation, which can lead the attacker to extract the root of trust. The third aspect is related to the, I would say, supply chain trust or the trust of the hardware itself. Because like in software, you can have a virus or a malware that can intentionally, you know, add it to your software so that it can do harmful things, including, you know, extracting sensitive information. Hardware can have exactly the same thing, right? And the trust in the supply chain and the trust of the hardware that you have in hand itself and nothing malicious and inserted into the hardware to leak the information to somewhere else is an important aspect as well. So we're working, I would say, on the three aspects. One, to protect in a static, like the root of trust. Two, during operation, we are trying to close all of the kind of channel. Three is trying to be sure that the hardware is clean and doesn't have any kind of malware or malicious insertion.
Okay. So how we're getting kind of close to the end, but something I'm just curious, you hear so much about supply chain. How real is the supply chain threat to cyber physical?
It is very real. I mean, I would say it is real as much as the percentage of the hardware that we have inside our systems, which are coming from anywhere that we cannot guarantee and we cannot trust. So it's absolutely real. How much harmful it does, how much money we lost, how much privacy we are in a bad shape, I would say a lot. But numbers, I couldn't give you exact numbers, but the answer to your question, it's very real. It's very, very real. Yeah, particularly for anything that is sensitive to either the normal people life or anything related to the infrastructure or the anything like mission critical systems or anything like this. It's extremely, yeah.
So especially our almost like mission critical, you said critical infrastructure, military type of equipment, stuff that might.
Yeah, definitely. And not only military, just think about, I mean, the electronic, I would say, meters that we have for electricity. And if we are not like securing something like this and something happened intentionally to make, you know, a big problem with like the whole infrastructure in the middle of the winter, for example. So, I mean, there are a lot of stuff there to think about and to be sure to protect, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, kind of in closing, anything that you want to get out to our listeners about how they can engage with you, what types of services you offer, go ahead and give a shout out.
Well, I mean, it's again, I'm in the, from an education standpoint of view, I'm always happy to receive new students and anybody interested in learning about hardware security or pursuing any kind of degree. So, I mean, I'm working with a very reputable university and a very wonderful, I would say, environment to learn anyway. And so that's one aspect. The other aspect, when it comes to product or anything, I mean, we have, I have a company which is working in this domain. So if somebody interested in a product or anything like this, they definitely can help. So I have a specific thing in mind right now. So.
All right. And that's Robust Tech. How would they get a hold of you? How would they find your company online?
Just the you know, the website, and I think you probably we can put it in a comment or anything if you don't mind. Yeah.
All right, we'll do that. But thanks a lot for joining today, Aslam.
Sure,
you know, this
sure.
topic we could talk about for days and get very in depth, but we kind of just wanted to touch the surface and have people understand how it does affect them. And I think we did get that message out. So thank you.
Thank you so much for the invitation and for the nice discussion. I appreciate it.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.